White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 480.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins! Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with TheWarEagleReader.com and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family. You know you are our Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we're back with another sort of live episode. We've had some various flashback episodes and other features lately because there just hadn't been all that much going on. We're still not even sure we'll have tackle football this fall to talk about, but we needed to get back together and talk about a few things. I think we got some pretty interesting topics to cover tonight. So what is new with you? How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. You know, we're hanging in there, you know, like everybody else, being careful and trying to enjoy ourselves while not being around too much around other people or being outside where it's brutally hot now.
Yeah, it's like one thing after another between it's super, super hot, at least it is here, and we've got the coronavirus raging again, and it's crazy. At least for those of our listeners who are into other things as well as football, we do have racing back. I know that NASCAR has been doing some stuff for a while. IndyCar had their first race a month ago, and they came back on Saturday with the second race of the year. And then yesterday on Sunday, Formula One had their first race. No crowds, which is weird, and that's going to be very strange if they end up having to do football that way. But at least we're starting to get a little bit, you know, and even when things are so bad here that it seems like everything is getting worse in the United States in some places, it still kind of seems like things are trying by the hardest to get back to normal, and that feels a little bit better, I guess. So,
sure.
Let's see. We've got several things to talk about tonight. One thing that had people, I think, a little hepped up today, we want to go ahead and jump into maybe first, is you had something to say about the new lights in the stadium. Explain for people like me that don't have any understanding of why this is controversial, why I should be all hepped up about they're having new lights put in the stadium.
Aren't you the guy who wrote the paper about the history of the stadium?
Yeah, and they're putting in new lights. There's a sentence at the end of it. What's the big deal?
Well, a couple of things. Mm-hmm. And I put this on our agenda as LED lights in the stadium, good idea or the end of Western civilization?
Right, and I see that, and I'm like, I understand the good idea part. I don't understand how it could be the end of Western civilization. I feel like next you're going to say they're changing from Dr. Pepper to Mr. Pibb at the concession stand. End of Western civilization. I don't get the problem. So I'm hoping you will enlighten me and anybody else out there. I'm sure everybody else listening knows way more than I do about it, and they're all fired up too. But I just don't see what the issue is.
I think Auburn replaced the lights in the stadium.
Okay.
They needed to replace them. They were due.
Yeah.
And they were an expensive older bulb. They replaced them with LED bulbs, which would be cheaper to operate. So that's the, you know, the basic budgetary engineering good reason to do it, right?
Sounds good to me.
When you do that, you get the ability to control the LED lights, to dim them, to change the hue, the color and all that kind of stuff. And so where people get upset is now they can do these fancy light shows kind of thing in the stadium instead of just having the lights on. And B, Alabama did a whole bunch of this last year. They had a thing where they would turn the lights like crimson at certain points late in the game or whatever. And then also, I think multiple stadiums have done this where they do the lights in such a way that if you have epilepsy, you're going to have a problem. Where they do like kind of a strobing effect. So I think there's some, I think Auburn will probably do it more tastefully than other people, But I get it. It's change, and change is bad, and people are harumphing about it and that kind of stuff.
So this is basically just the, if Auburn has drop shadows on the numbers on the jerseys, I will blow up Samford Hall kind of thing all over again.
Well, and if Alabama had drop shadows on the jerseys first, and then it appeared that we were copying them, even though we had been saying, you know, I think Brandon Marcello reported that we were going to change the lights out like 6-8 months ago, something like that.
So. Well, didn't Georgia do it too a while back or something?
Yeah, they've done it. They've had the lights. And again, those twos weren't the first stadiums to do it. Some professional stadiums did it first and did it cooler. So I particularly don't think it's a huge deal, but I wanted to talk about it for the, you know, just for the enjoyment of us kind of going over the top about it with our reactions to it.
I see. Well, I'm sorry I dragged it back down into reality. I didn't mean to do that. I didn't understand. I mean, if it's cheaper and it's brighter, because remember, it was kind of embarrassing to me. Yes. ESPN used to have to bring in an extra light pole to televise night games. Like, what are we got all these giant lights up on these up on the decks for if they're not even bright enough to have a game on television? I don't understand that. So,
I was going to make a joke about we're going to just take the lights out and go back to day games, but nobody wants to do a day game.
Oh, man. That would mean more games.
There we go.
The 11 a.m. Jefferson Pilot time slot of death.
Oh, man, that's what we need. Get rid of those newfangled lights, and let's have some more Jefferson Pilot time slot of death, baby. That would be great.
Come on. Come on, man.
That would be awesome. Oh, no. Well, I understand. Yeah, I understand. Well, I think it was Nathan or somebody on Twitter this afternoon was saying, you know, somebody said something like I'm the guy that says it would be neat to have an alternate uniform once every 3 years and I get eggs thrown at me or something, you know? And I'm like, yeah, you know, here I am saying I would think it would be cool if we wore orange jerseys when we played like Louisiana Monroe or somebody. So I'm a complete heretic.
Harumph.
Yeah, see.
Harumph, harumph.
Oh boy.
You lied to me. Release the hounds.
It's the hounds chasing me away from Jordan Hare for daring to say such a thing. All right. Well, there's your LED lights bulletin. I'm not going to lose any sleep over that, I promise.
And thanks. It's been a good show.
Well, you know, the one thing,
we're
though,
just
that
doing the headlines here.
The one thing that did occur to me about it is it would be neat any other year, but this year, will they even get to use them? A, and B, will there be 85,000 people in the stadium, 87,000 people in the stadium, or will it be sparse? Because to me, the only thing that would look worse on television than 30,000 people in the stands socially distanced would be doing a big disco light show for 30,000 people with a lot of empty spaces. I mean, everybody would intellectually understand that they had to be that few people in there, you know, but it would look like a strip club at 3 a.m. when there's one elderly dancer on the stage and like two old drunk truck drivers passed out and they're doing the music and the lights. You know what I mean? That's not a good look.
There's an analogy.
I'm sure you're familiar with that with that environment, right? And you would agree with me that that's not a good look. Okay.
We'll just take it for granted. I get it. I mean, it's like everything else. We would, you know, I think it's one of those things that any other year people would be harumphing even more about. But
I'll just take football right now. I don't care what lights or music or what the drop shadows are or anything like that. And if we're putting in disco lights, it just means that
we gotta get better at celebrating.
That's right. So there you go. Well, anyway, there was a basketball game and it did not go well. What was the deal with this, John? Can you explain that to our listeners or at all? Because it's kind of a weird deal.
There's a group of kind of, I would call them like semi-pro teams.
Yeah.
Formed a league basically of former college players that can't play overseas and they can't, you know, the NBA is shut down and other things are shut down. And so they got some guys together and organized to kind of pick their own teams and organized. And so a group of Auburn players organized around Tampa, and they're like War Tampa, basically, was kind of the team. And They kind of had Auburn colors-ish, and there were several former Auburn players on it, including Bryce Bram. Mm-hmm. And so they played a game. And so it's basically, I don't know how many teams, but it's a big tournament kind of thing. And they played their first game Saturday night. And it was, again, reminiscent of some other games. It was, you know, Bryce Brown and nobody else could do anything offensively. Oh, they ended up losing.
He ended up having to play point guard, right? That was what I understood. Yes. Because the other two point guards didn't get to play.
Yeah. And so they're going to be – I think they're planning to do it again next year, the whole league. And the guys, you know, on Twitter basically said that they're going to bring in some other Auburn players next year, some other former Auburn players to play in that team next year. So, it's something fun and different. And it was, you know, it was sports at a time when there hasn't been a lot of sports. So.
Yeah, it's too bad they didn't do great. They got kind of blown out in that one game, but they didn't have the – I saw they lost to a team from up near me. They were called the House of Pain, which was funny because it was from Champaign. So I guess that was Hal 9000's team. See, so I can see Bryce saying, I want to win the ball game, and them saying, I'm sorry, Bryce, I can't let you do that. And so it didn't work out too well. You had a note here, will we have a football season? And we were kind of touching that on that already. By the way, before we talk about that very briefly, I want to mention that we do have a main topic or two tonight, and what we're going to do, so in case you want to stay tuned in for our big thing coming up, is we're going to talk about the All-Decade team. We're going to go through, and each of us is going to pick our selections for the Auburn All-Decade team of the previous decade, and then we'll see how the voting actually turned out with Auburn. Because they announced it on Instagram, but I haven't seen it anywhere else. My wife is on there, so she saw it and sent it to me, and I haven't even been able to find it on doing a Google search. So we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But first, what do you think about the football season? We talked about that a little bit last time. What are your current thoughts where we are?
I mean, I'm like a lot of people. I'm a little more pessimistic than I was a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I see the increase in cases, especially college students going out, whether they're football players or others, and seeing big spikes of cases. And again, if colleges only go back in online mode, you cannot have football.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unrealistic, I think. And so, again, I think they're going to try to do it. I think there's going to be cancellations. Not every team in the country is going to play. I think probably no non-Division 1A teams will play. And even some of those won't play for sure. And I think there'll be cancellations. There'll be week to week. There'll be people who get sick, and teams are playing undermanned or whatever. So I think that's, you know, it's not going to be, you know, all the way 100% football that we want. I think we'd have to wait a year for that. But I think it is going to be. I think they're going to try. That's what I think.
I think they have to try. My wife keeps saying, I don't think there's going to be any football at all. I think you guys are all setting yourself up for disappointment. There's no way. And I keep replying, I understand that. And if that was the only factor, I would agree. But I said, there's billions of dollars on all these colleges, you know, universities at stake. Plus, you know, I said, it's not like the NFL. The NFL has one person that can kind of say, here's what the entire league is going to do. Whereas college football is so decentralized, the NCAA barely has anything to say about anything. They're, you know, about the only thing the NCAA does is just decide who gets on probation, and they don't barely even do that anymore. You know, it's all up to the conferences, the conference chairs, the individual university presidents. There's so many people with a hand in making those decisions that, you know, I really worry that you're going to end up having like the Pac-12 say, we're not going to play at all. And then the Big 12 or something say, well, we're going to play like a conference schedule, but we're not going to play out of conference games. And the SEC is like, oh, we'll play everything. Let's go. You know, come on, we'll play in between coughs. You know, we're fine. And then, you know, you get that entire range of reactions. And how do you have a consistent – I mean, it's like in a normal year, the decentralization of college football is not an issue, more or less. But when it comes to something like this, you suddenly see the real problems you have with such a decentralized arrangement, you know what I mean? A decentralized system. It's not even a confederacy. It's like it's a loose grouping of like-minded institutions, really, at best. So I don't know.
That's a good way to describe it, and it's a good description of the issue and kind of where we are. They Yeah. You know, there isn't a, you know, one group or one person in charge that can make sure it works well. And I think, and again, if you think it can work perfectly with colleges, I mean, I would say Major League Baseball is trying to come back right now, and watch them. What's happening with them. There's some real issues going on. There's players saying, I'm not going to play. There's teams that are getting delays on getting their test results back, so they don't know if they can be can be out doing stuff and who can't. So it's
And again, that's with a sport with a commissioner. What are you going to do? I mean, I just keep thinking, what if we play 2 weeks? Even that, right? What if we play 1 week or 2 weeks, and then, you know, the Pac-12 commissioner says, nope, that's it, we're pulling the plug. Well, does everybody else keep going, or does everybody else stop? Or if it was March, they'd all stop. You know what I mean? Because that's what happened. As soon as that first domino fell in March, everything quit. I don't know that that'll happen this time.
Well, again, I think there's more testing now, and there will be more testing, you know, by the time we get to September. And, you know, there's contact tracing and case investigation going on, and that helps some, but you can't contain it when everybody's going out every night and stuff.
So, I know it.
I mean, I think the other thing you're going to see is forget that stuff. You're going to see, like, you know, whatever Ole Miss has, you know, whatever 400 students test positive in a week, and they're going to be like, that's it. You're shutting the campus down. Everybody go home, football team included. And I think that's, you know, you may see some of that. On Jay Tate's podcast last week, they were talking about something that I've heard other people talk about, which is a 10-game schedule where you do away with two of your, you know, lower tier cupcake kind of games and build in some weeks for, you know, giving people off or if you have to reschedule something.
Yeah, that makes more sense than anything I've heard so far. I don't know if it would work, but yeah.
Well, and I would say anything after Thanksgiving, don't hold your breath.
Man, yeah. Well, and the Iron Bowl is it usually, where does it fall now? They've moved it around so much. It used to be in December. Then it was Thanksgiving weekend. Where is it now? I can't even remember. Like the middle of November
now? It was the weekend before that, but keep going.
Yeah, that's fine. That's right. They just moved it around. So I think it's earlier now. We'll see. I don't know. I mean, I know that every time I go out to pick up takeout food for my family around here, in Southern Illinois, nobody has a mask on. Even the freaking people in the restaurants don't have on masks. Maybe one waitress will, maybe not. You know, people look at me like I'm crazy because my wife tells me, put your mask on, your health isn't great, you know. And I go everywhere in my mask. I always feel like I'm about to rob the place. I put my mask on before I go in the door. I feel like I should be pulling a gun out too.
it's the Saturday after Thanksgiving.
After? Oh boy, okay, well. Let's talk about the preseason all-conference teams. What the heck, man? We have two second-team players, and that's it. What, I mean, is that legit, or are we thinking we're better than we are?
Well, I think it's – you brought up a good question. Is this a reason to lower expectations? I think this was voted on by the SIDs, I think, so it's not the coaches or the media one or whatever. But I think it's fair to look around on Auburn's roster, and I think, I mean, you talk about this sometimes where I don't know if we have a bunch of, like, any 10s. I think we got a bunch of 8s. Do you know? Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, yes.
And so, like, who, if you were going to pick on all conference players from Auburn's roster, who would you pick?
Well, yeah, I think it's one of those circumstances where our best players, other than we need to say first who they are. It's Big Cat Bryant, second team defensive end, outside linebacker, and Christian. As second team kick returner, after he did some really good things as a kick returner last year. But I think that it's one of those deals where our real bread and butter players that we're going to depend on, they're not Cam Newton, they're not Nick Fairley, you know. But they're just solid. They're just rock solid, like you say, 8s. And so, like, our entire linebacker core is solid as the Rock of Gibraltar, but none of them is going to be a first or second team All-SEC right now. They maybe should have one or two, but they're just not.
Yeah, I think Britt probably should be. But, I mean, and again, like, I think Seth Williams is an all-conference kind of player. But I think, again, we're also in a league where, like, Waddle's returning.
Yeah,
and one of the other Alabama receivers returned, and what's his name? Is it LSU still? Chase. So they got, there's a lot of competition. So Seth Williams might be an All-SEC player in other years, but this year he may not, just because of the talent at receiver.
Yeah, that's the thing. When people are debating on Auburn Twitter about who are our best receivers ever or whatever, and the younger ones always want to throw Seth Williams on there, and I'm like, well, he may end up being one of our greatest receivers, but right now he's not even on the second team All-SEC for this year. So, you know, you got to – it's like, there's competition. There's a lot of play – at the positions we're particularly good at, there are other really particularly good players around. And then, you know, we've got a lot of positions where we're starting new people, like the offensive line, for example. So, and you know, Patrick Nix is solid, but he's just he's coming into his second year starting as a true freshman, whereas there are more seasoned, you know, like Trask quarterbacks that have had a little more success maybe or something. So, speaking of all Auburn, the big thing I wanted to talk about tonight was our all-decade team, because Auburn themselves, AuburnTigers.com or whatever, they've been asking for a while now for people to vote on the best players of the last decade, which is pretty much 2010 through 2019. And I voted, and the results were predictable, not necessarily who I voted for, but pretty predictable. So I thought that we would go through position by position, and you tell me your selections, I'll tell you mine, and then we'll reveal who actually won the vote for people that don't know yet. How does that sound?
Sounds good.
All right. So first up, and I think probably the easiest, is I'm going to do it in the order they have it, but they have it in a different order than the answers. So first up, they have running backs. Vote for two. Here are your nominees. Pick two running backs: Cameron Artis Payne, Peyton Barber, Michael Dyer, Corey Grant, Kerryon Johnson, Trey Mason, Cam Martin, Ontario McCaleb, Cameron Petway, and Jatarvius Booby Whitlow. Who are your two picks, John?
I think this is one of the easier categories. To me, and there's a lot of depth here, but I think it's Kerryon Johnson and Trey Mason.
Those were our two SEC offensive players of the year. So I think you have to go with them. It's too bad, in a way, because Cameron Artis Payne had a spectacular 2014. We know this, and he was first-team All-SEC.
He had an excellent. He was Michael, really good as a backup, too.
Michael Dyer broke the freshman record set by Bo Jackson, and I think would have been spectacular if his head was screwed on right. And, Lord, you can't take anything away from the contributions of Ontario McCaleb, particularly in 2000. Well, 9 doesn't count, but 2010 in particular, and 11, but mostly 10. And Cameron Petway had that one big year in 16, and then he kind of fell off the earth. But, yeah, I totally said Trey Mason and Kerryon Johnson. Everybody, I think, said that. You got to go with those two. Though, interestingly, Michael Dyer had the most yards per game of any of these players at 89.8. So, but in any case,
the thing to me is like that Kerryon Johnson and Trey Mason are far ahead as have the most total yards of these players. And third is Cameron Artis Payne. Who out of that group is fourth? Do you know without looking?
Cameron Artis Payne, Kerryon Johnson, Trey Mason. Who's
Kerryon Johnson, Trey Mason, and Cameron Artis Payne have the most total yards. Who's fourth out of the rest of that group? Total yards earned in their career.
I'm looking at the names to try to figure out. That's tough. I mean, it's probably going to be somebody I don't think. Cameron Petway had a big 16, but Whitlow had a big 18 and 19. So, but then, of course, Corey Grant for 4 years. Who was it?
Ontario McCaleb had over 2,000 yards in his Auburn career, averaged 6.7 yards a carry. He had 500 more yards than either Cameron Petway or Jatarvius Whitlow, and 1,000 more yards than Corey Grant in his career.
Wow. Well, he was a huge part of the puzzle. I'm trying to find.
Now, again, he had almost the lowest yards per game because he played in a lot of games. But, all right.
Okay, so here's the we also have to pick, before we do that, we also have to pick one tight end and H-back, and they revealed them together. So here are your nominees here. Chandler Cox, Brandon Fulce, Philip Lutzenkirchen, C.J. Uzomah, and Jay Prosh. Who do you want as your tight end H-back? You only get one out of both positions, unfortunately.
I mean, it's tempting to go Lutzenkirchen because he's more of a true tight end, but I got to go Prosh.
Yeah, Prosh was just such a great blocker on that 13 team. Lutzenkirchen, though, I mean, he had the yards and the touchdowns and everything. He was a touchdown machine. So it's got to be between Lutzenkirchen and Prosh. But I think in just for, you know, what he did in 2010, scoring and everything, I would probably go with Lutzenkirchen. But Prosh is very, very close. All right, so your answers are Kerryon Johnson, Trey Mason, and Philip Lutzenkirchen. And you knew he was going to win, right? I mean, if it's a popularity contest, Philip Lutzenkirchen was going to win. So that was like a done deal. I could have made a lot of money betting that if anybody wanted to bet against me. All right.
If you're betting on this voting, seek help.
If you can't get help from Charter, get help somewhere. Let's see. All right. So that's running back and H-back tight end type thing. This is the easiest one. Come on. Quarterbacks. I mean, there is a little competition here.
Chris Todd.
Oh, God. Here are your nominees. You got Jeremy Johnson. That's going to be tough to beat coming out of the chute there. Nick Marshall. All right. Nick Marshall now. Cam Newton, 1 year. Bo Nix, 1 year. Jarrett Stidham and Sean White. So I think we can throw Sean White out and Jeremy Johnson out. And Bo Nix, too, because just 1 year as a freshman. So you're really looking at Nick Marshall, Cam Newton, and Jarrett Stidham, right? Those are the three.
Well, we know who it's going to be. Here's my question for you. Is for second place,
yeah,
Stidham or Nick Marshall? Who would
you
pick?
Stidham had more passing yards, but, I mean, Nick Marshall was the most underrated quarterback in Auburn history, and I wish we'd had two more years with him. He was just amazing. And so I got to say Nick Marshall is second. He's not going to be able to catch Cam, but who could? But in any normal decade, Nick Marshall would win this.
Yes.
He was like the ultimate wishbone quarterback in the modern era, you know? Like he was the option quarterback that could keep it or give it to a running back or throw it, and he was really good doing all three things. So... yeah, I hate it for Nick that he doesn't win this, and I'm not. I mean, I know it's Cam. So, all right. Oh, dang it! I keep messing this up. I'm not good with Instagram. Okay. Okay. So the next category is receivers. Vote for two. Here are your nominees, and there are quite a few. So hang on. You might want to make a note here or two. Here are your nominees for receivers of the decade. You get two. Yeah, it says two, but they list three. I wonder if they had a tie or something. They list three winners, but you're supposed to only vote for two. All right, maybe they had a tie. Your nominees are Darvin Adams, Emory Blake, Quan Bray, Sammy Coates, Marcus Davis, Ryan Davis, Will Hastings, Ricardo Lewis, Ricardo Lewis.
Oh, my God!
Anthony Schwartz. Dang it.
Darius Slayton.
I couldn't find it in time. Dang it. Oh, there it is.
Oh, Anthony Schwartz.
And I see your Schwartz is as big as mine.
Darius Slayton, Tony Stevens, Eli Stove, Duke Williams, Seth Williams, and T-Zach. Terrell Zachary. Now, I have a soft spot in my heart for T-Zach because he was the long-distance man in 2010, and he was big in some games for us that year, but he was just like one piece of the puzzle in that season with a lot of weapons, so I know he's not going to be one of the top. So it really comes, let me just guess, right? It's going to come down to Darvin Adams, Emory Blake, Sammy Coates, Ryan Davis, Ricardo Lewis, Duke Williams, and Seth Williams. I'm just guessing. Wouldn't you say? Is there anybody I'm leaving off?
Darius Slayton's better than Duke Williams. I mean, more productive.
Yeah, I don't even remember Darius Slayton doing much, though. I guess he did some things.
It was, you know, 2015-18 offense, so.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So who do you? Who are your two out of all that? And that's tough. I see why they cheated and had three.
You didn't include Bill Hastings in your short list either?
No. Sorry.
It's tough not to include Ryan Davis.
Yeah.
Because the receptions, I mean, that's hard.
His receptions are ridiculous.
Yeah, insane compared to Bell. So that's why it's like, I almost feel like I have to include him just because that's so, he caught so many passes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if it was me, I'm going to go Sammy Coates and Emery Blake.
I would have never guessed that Emery Blake had more receiving yards from 2010 through 2012. He almost 2,000 yards in those 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
But he has 3 years. Darvin Adams only has one. If you extended Darvin Adams across three seasons, he'd have almost 3,000 yards.
Sure. So, I mean, Darvin Adams is a great player. He's a better player. But so maybe I go Coates and Ryan Davis.
I never realized that Darius Slayton had 1,605 yards receiving. That just blows my mind.
Sammy Coates 2.0.
He was a very quiet 1,600 yards. All right. Well, Seth Williams is too new. I can't vote for him. Duke Williams ticked everybody off. I'm going to go Darvin Adams, Sammy Coates, and Ryan Davis. And with a special honorable mention to T-Zach, just because of his great contributions to our national championship winning team.
One of the things that's interesting, you point out correctly, some of these guys played a lot more games than the others.
Yeah.
On a yards per game basis, it's Darvin Adams and it's not close.
Yeah. Yeah. 68.8 yards per game. No kidding. Cam loved to hit him.
Another one I look at is like yards per catch. Sammy Coates, 21.4.
Whereas I'm sure Ryan Davis is like 8.7. Emery Blake had almost 2,000 yards those 3 years, and 16 touchdowns, which is nothing to sneeze at. But he always drove me crazy. He always seemed like the third banana on his teams, behind Darvin Adams or Sammy Coates or whoever. And he always seemed shaky with catching the ball. He used to drive me crazy. I kept thinking he's going to drop it every time he caught it. He'd flub it around and stuff. So you got to give a special also a shout to Ricardo Lewis. Come on, man. I mean, he didn't rewrite the record books or, show off his great hands, really. He dropped as many as he caught, it seemed like. And he does have the distinction of being the only Auburn player I know of who did the jet sweep and ran into the quarterback, causing a fumble. But that's pretty good. But he caught the miracle at Jordan-Hare, right? He caught the prayer at Jordan-Hare. And that goes a long way. All right, here are your winners, the official winners. Sammy Coates, Emery Blake, Ryan Davis.
Hmm?
All right. Okay. I don't know how they got three, by the way, but they said three.
It must have been a tie.
Must have been. All right, let's see what our next position is here. Zipping right along. So we did running backs, quarterbacks, wide receivers, tight ends. The offensive line's down at the bottom, and I'm going to go in order. So cornerbacks, vote for two. I think this is pretty easy, too, honestly. You got Carlton Davis, Chris Davis, Javaris Davis, Jamel Dean, Joshua Holsey, Noah Igbinoghi, Jonathan Jones. I swear that's a listener of ours. Jonathan Mincy, Nico Thorpe. Oh, look out. Nico Thorpe's going to win. And Ryan White. All right. So you got three Davises and some other people here. So, wow, I got to go out of this. The answers are different than in the different order than the questions are. So it's really messing me up. A completely different order. Who did this?
Carlton Davis is a gimme. Okay, he's absolutely one of these two.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And then it's just a question of, I think it could be Chris Davis. It could be Dean or Ibnyagadi. I mean, Jonathan Jones played a lot of games and made a lot of plays.
He did.
So Javaris Davis out of this group has the most interceptions.
Jonathan Mincy has the most tackles.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
But he played the most games.
Chris Davis never intercepted anybody.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to go Jonathan Jones as the other one besides Carl Davis, but it could be a lot. Okay. It could be a lot of these guys.
I'm going to go Carlton Davis and Chris Davis because it's Chris Davis. With a shout out to, several of the others, were very big. Well, here's the official answer. They actually listed five. So I guess you got to vote for two, but they took the top five for the team. So their answers are, he's not even on the list. How did he get on there? One of the winners is Rudy Ford. He wasn't even an option. How did that happen? He's not even an option on here.
Maybe it's a write-in vote thing.
Holy cow! I guess so. Okay, so Rudy Ford, Jermaine Whitehead. He's not even on here either.
No, that's safeties. You're looking at safeties.
Oh, that's where they combined it. Okay, see, that's what I'm saying. The questions and the answers are completely different format. All right, so there's the safeties. We already know. Sorry, I spoiled it. Okay, so the defensive backs, the corners, Chris Davis, Carlton Davis, and Iggy. So I said Chris Davis and Carlton Davis, and they threw in Iggy. So that's fair. All right, well, let's go ahead and do the safeties then. I didn't realize they were combining them.
That's fine.
All right, so we already know that the winners are Rudy Ford and Jermaine Whitehead. The other possibilities are Tasharvin Bell. That's pretty tough. Blake Countess. Jeremiah Denson, Trey Matthews, man, come on. Demetrius McNeil, Steven Roberts, Nick Ruffin, Ryan Smith, Robinson Therese, Daniel Thomas, on top of Jermaine Whitehead. That's tough, man. I mean, I guess Rudy Ford, I get that. He had so many more tackles, 275 tackles compared to everybody else. But, I mean, Trey Matthews?
Denson was an excellent player. I mean, the last few years,
yeah,
he was a really, really good player. And Daniel Thomas, too. So it's tough for me not to include one of them in that.
Man, but Jermaine Whitehead had 9 interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
Whew, that's tough. All right, well, again, their winners are Rudy Ford and Jermaine Whitehead. And I'm just like, I guess Whitehead for the interceptions and Rudy Ford for the tackles?
Yeah, and Whitehead played a bunch of games and made plays, too. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was cornerbacks.
And safeties.
All right. So now we're down to linebackers. Linebackers. Your nominees for your all-decade Auburn linebackers are Montavious Atkinson, Darren Bates, KJ Britt, Josh Bynes, Deshaun Davis, Jonathan Evans, El Toro Freeman, Chris Frost, Justin Garrett, Jake Holland, Casanova McKenzie, Craig Stevens, Trey Williams, and Darrell Williams. When we had Davises everywhere else on the field, we had Williamses in the linebacker spots. I think that there are a couple here that really stand out. Let's see, how many do you get to vote for? 3. So what are your thoughts on linebackers?
I mean, I've some of the players on this list I have expressed my feelings about on this podcast, about the quality of their play over the years. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Deshaun Davis and Darren Bates, and then Trey Williams, maybe. Casanova McKenzie made a lot of plays over his time in Auburn.
He did.
But, you know, Josh Bynes is solid during, you know, the limited time that he played. And, you know, he was on the 2010 team. What do you think?
I have got to go with I got to have Deshaun Davis. That is no question about it.
I get that.
And just looking at the numbers, remembering the reputation and the impact, Casanova McKenzie was awesome. So I've got Deshaun Davis, Casanova McKenzie. My third one is the one that's kind of up in the air. And the numbers are one thing. Darren Bates certainly had good numbers 2010 through 2012. And Chris Frost had really good numbers over the years. 17 quarterback hurries, 247 tackles. But, yeah, he had issues. I think that I've got to go with Josh Bynes because he pretty much was the defensive leader in 2010. And I know his numbers don't measure up in that one season to some of the others, but for the intangibles, he was the quarterback of that defense. Anything on that defense that Nick Fairley wasn't doing was Josh Bynes doing it. So that's my 3. What do you think?
I like it.
Okay. Your winners are Deshaun Davis, Casanova McKenzie, and Josh Bynes. All right.
There you go.
3 for 3, finally. I got that one. All right. Let's see where we are now.
Defensive lineman, I think.
Yeah, I'm trying to close out the windows here.
You don't have to read the defensive tackles, okay?
Do what?
You don't even have to read the other defensive tackles.
Oh, right. Well, we got to vote for two. Let me do. All right, defensive ends first.
But there's two obvious answers.
Well, right. Okay. You're right. Okay, well, here's the defensive ends. Kenneth Carter, Nick Coe, Marlon Davidson, Noza, D. Ford, Jeff Holland, Carl Lawson, Corey Lemonnier, Ladarius Owens, and Craig Sanders. And I'm just going to say that there are really three big names and like a couple more medium to large names on that list.
This one's harder than I thought it was going to be.
You vote for two. It's got to be between Marlon Davidson, D. Ford, and Carl Lawson, hadn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Holland had an amazing season that one year.
Yeah.
But I think it's got to be between those three guys. And I think if I had to pick two, I got to go Lawson and Marlon Davidson.
Yeah, that's the thing is that Lawson had so many issues, though. He kept getting hurt and kept getting hurt. And he had a hard time having that one good season. But he did have a couple of key plays in 2013, it seems like, getting us the national championship. So I'm going to vote for Marlon Davidson and D. Ford.
Okay.
And the winner of the defensive end is D. Ford and Marlon Davidson. Hey, there we go. All right. No disrespect to Carl Lawson or Noza Igwe or whoever. Man, it says something about our defensive ends that Carl Lawson did not make the all-decade team after all the, you know, the hype and everything he did. All right, let's see. Defensive tackles. Now, this is the one that's really hard, John. I don't know how we're ever going to come up with these two.
It's not hard.
Here's the competition. Montravius Adams. Hey, come on now. Come on now. Come on. Angelo Blackson. A little fella named Derek Brown. A little fella named Nick Fairley, Devontae Lambert, Dontavius Russell, Jeffrey Whitaker, Andrew Williams, and Gabe Wright. All right, you can throw all the rest of them out. The only possible competition to Derek Brown and Nick Fairley is Montravius Adams. And I'll put it this way. Montravius Adams was an excellent Auburn defensive tackle. Derek Brown and Nick Fairley were transcendent defensive tackles. Would you agree?
Yes.
All right, so I think we're agreed on that, right? And the winners, to nobody's surprise, are Derek Brown and Devontae Lambert. No, I'm just kidding. Nick Fairley. That's right. Woo! All right. Let's see what that leaves us.
We got special teams players next. It's about to get real.
Or as they like to say, teams. So first up, yeah, here comes the return specialists. And I feel like I know who's going to win this, but it depends on how you look at the numbers and everything. So here we go. Quan Bray, Chris Davis, Marcus Davis, Ryan Davis, Jonathan Ford, that'd be Rudy, Corey Grant, Iggy, Steven Roberts, King Tut, Kerryon Johnson, Trey Mason, Omac, and Damon Washington. Now, it's got to be between Quan Bray, Chris Davis, Marcus Davis, Ryan Davis, and Christian Tut.
Like 10 guys.
Well, I just listed four. Quan Bray, Chris Davis, Marcus Davis, and Ryan Davis. I mean, because Christian Tut's just starting out. He had a good year, but I don't know if I'm ready to give him all decade in his freshman and sophomore years.
What do you think?
Igbinoghene, you know, is probably the best kickoff returner out of this group.
Yeah.
So it's because it's a little bit apples and oranges lumping them all together.
It is. Iggy had the most yards average, 27, and two touchdowns.
Yeah. So I.
You vote for one, and we all know who it's going to be.
Okay. Go.
We all know.
Go ahead.
Well, I don't think this is actually
a miracle that turned to hair.
No, that's the Georgia. I think it's...
Holy cow! Oh, my God!
Yeah, I think that's it. Your winner of kick returner, of the all-decade kick returner... Oh, I got to go back to... I got to go to teams now because I'm in defense. This is very annoying having to do it this way. Chris Davis is your winner. Yeah, because I mean, you could throw whatever numbers you wanted up there. People were going to vote for one play. And you know, the funny thing is, he was on the national championship winning team too.
Yes.
But he got hurt on the opening kickoff. Can you believe that? He got hurt on the opening kickoff against Oregon in 2010 or 11, however you want to say it. All right, let's get this done. Place kickers. Now this is tough, right? You've got four nominees, and all four of them are all world. Wesley Byram, Anders Carlson, Daniel Carlson, and Cody Parkey. And I mean, you know, Anders, I guess, is the low man there just because he's just starting out. But the other three, man, how can you go wrong with any of them?
I think it's Daniel Carlson.
Well, his points are ridiculous compared. All right, look at this, John. Here's total points they scored. You ready? Wes Byram, 120. Now, this is just in 1 year. He was the 2010 kicker. So that, to be fair, this is him in one season. 123 points. Anders Carlson has 191 in two seasons. Cody Parkey has when he was in competition with Daniel Carlson, had 253. Daniel Carlson has 480 points. That is ridiculous. He also has the highest percentage at 80.7. He attempted 114 field goals and made 92. But, of course, he played more games than anybody else by a ways. And I agree that Daniel Carlson is a machine. Anybody that has the nickname Legatron or whatever, right? But, I mean, you know what? I'm going to go against the grain here, even though I know Daniel Carlson's probably going to win it. I'm going to take the guy that delivered me a trophy, Wesley Byram. He beat Florida in the swamp as a freshman and gator chomped Urban Meyer. And then he beat Oregon on his last kick to win the national championship. Numbers aside, that's Chris Davis level, just big things. I'm going Wes Byram. What do you say?
I'm going Daniel Carlson, but I get it. I think Byram is clearly the second choice.
You can't go wrong with any of those guys.
No.
Yeah, the winner was Daniel Carlson, but man, Wes Byram, come on. All right, and then punter. I mean, Steve Clark, Aiden Marshall, Kevin Phillips, Ryan Shoemaker, Aaron Sipos. It's got to be Steeman, right?
Steeman, Steve Clark, man.
It's got to be. Yeah, it is. Oh, man. My favorite Def Leppard guitarist, too. Let's see. So we've done place kickers, punters. Okay, offensive line is the only thing left.
I have a serious question. Do we actually want to discuss the offensive linemen? Do we have strong feelings about this?
I'll tell you who won. Crap, I did it again. All right, this is the last thing. We won't spend any more time
on this. I'll guess who wins, and then you tell me, okay? You ready?
I'm trying to get it open here. Quarterbacks.
While you get it open, running for tackles, I think it's going to be Greg Robinson and Lee Zimba. And for guards, it's going to be Braden Smith and Alex Kozan. Could be Chad Slade. And for center, I think it's going to be Reese Smukes.
You nailed it. That's all five. You got them.
There you go.
Zimba and Greg Robinson on the outsides, Braden Smith and Alex Kozan on the inside, and Reestus Mukes over the ball. That's right. Okay, well, that's it. That was the whole offensive line, so we are caught up. All right.
That was a fun exercise.
Yeah, that was neat. If you listeners have different thoughts about anything, if you want to argue like why it shouldn't be Chris Davis or why it shouldn't be, which I think receivers is probably the one that's the most up in the air. It's a lot of them were pretty cut and dried, but I could make an argument for like half those receivers easily. So. Yeah,
and the returner one was tough.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when you've got...
Dancing by the night.
It's just tough, man. All right, let's see. All right, well, we've got one last segment to go with our listener questions, but before we do that, we just got to quickly thank our patrons, thank the folks that keep this show on the air, and your support is more critical than ever for us right now at this time when football is kind of up in the air and everything is in flux, and we just need to be sure we can keep doing our shows, and you guys keep coming through for us, and we super appreciate that. For as little as $1 a month, you can join the AU Wishbone family and help keep the show going, and we thank you every episode. Just go to www.auwishbone.com, and there's a big orange button there that says Become a Patron. It's all you got to do for as little as a dollar. Whatever amount you want to sign up for is awesome, and you get various benefits, including hopefully things that we'll get to do once the sports actually start back again. And they are listed on the website. So just go to www.auwishbone.com and pick your tier and sign up. Here are our current patrons that provide all that you hear and see. That would include Matthew Flowers, Carl Von Drunker, Samuel Salvatore, and Christopher Burleson, along with Phil Amthor, Ben Spooner, Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, William Glenn Matthews, Gary Grant, Brian Gray, Willie Carden, Tom Anderson, Susan Trawick, Logan Chilton, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Steve Trawick, and Richard Stevens. And then you have William Morgan, Johnny Caldwell, Emmanuel Seaman, WDE Richie, Winston Boddy, Clinton Stewart, and Christopher Stewart, Mickey B, Phil Davis, Joshua Corbett, John Otsuki, Preston Settle, Daniel Odom, AU Falling Up, Alchemist, Kevin Smith, Clarence Alford, Will Summerford, David Hegler, Theodore Gary, Reynolds Wolf, Joel Beckham, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Ann Kangian, Catherine England, George Gaston, John McCune, David Evers, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, and Rich Reimer. All right, and then we get down to Shane Bailey, Chris Hinton, Di Bama, welcome aboard our newest member, Kevin Mahan, Sarah Hines, Darius Benton, Rob Morgan, Blake Heron, Hugh Anderson, Stephen Houston, Cato the Barner, Danny Flack, Papa Todd, Russell Milling, Kevin Kinoy, Don Zederman, Ross, Lane Middleton, Shannon Butson, Randall Walker, Chris Thrash, Tony Perry, Alex Wynn, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, and Mike Finley. And finally, we have good old Jeremy Minton, Wardam Wade, Spanky, J.W. Rice, Jason Albrick, Mick Vigicana, Russell Souther, Paul Bankson, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Stephen Wyatt, Trevor Johnson, Auburn Elvis, Robert Drain, Brandon Smith, Royce Alvarez, Thomas Brinson, David Smiley, Matthew Wagstaff, Donnie Reynolds, Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, Darren Pyle, Chris Camo, Ben Amos, Ruth, and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, plus Chris Brent Rumble, our one-time and anonymous donors. We thank you all from the bottom of our heart. You mean the world to us. Go to www.auwishbone.com. And we've actually had a couple of people like modify their amounts, and we've had a couple of new ones, and so we really appreciate it. I was worried things would go down during the plague, and instead they're holding steady or going up a little bit, and we really appreciate you guys for doing that. And now, I always check first, John. Do we have listener questions?
We do.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
Blame yourself.
All right, what we got?
All right, first question is from Bradley Blackman. He goes, yep. He says, how about some analysis of the offensive line? What changes strategically do you see with Coach Bignell? It's been covered. I apologize. All the podcast listing has me off a bit. We have not covered that, I think. No. The biggest thing is, I think it's just wide open.
Yeah. We got like a center, right? And that's it.
Yeah. And I think it's not a guarantee he's going to start, but it's probable. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing is, I think at guard, the last 2 years, we've been just okay. And I think the two tackles we've had the last 2 years, I think were really good. They weren't great, but they were solid, very good players. And I think people are going to miss, Prince Tega. And our transfer guy, they're gone. And I think
Driscoll.
And so I think, we may be better. The tackles may be better against the run, but not as good against the pass early on. But I think, again, the guards, I think, in the center are going to be better against the run. We haven't seen the offensive line play. We don't know how McNeil's going to do things. So this is really, we're reading tea leaves and smoke against the wall and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's hard to just know much right now. That's the thing. I mean, anybody out there that tells you they know a lot about the offensive line is either lying or you're talking to the coaching staff. And even then, I'm not sure because...
Well, and I think they don't know. I think here's the good thing. I think there's about, 10 or 12 solid players that they have to pick, four or five out of, right?
Yeah.
So it's very doable. And I think the competition is going to be a good thing, and that they'll have some choices and we'll develop some depth where I think we had, you know, some years where we didn't have a lot of depth.
And it's we know we've got some really good ones lined up and coming in this year and all that. It's we don't have seasoned, experienced depth right now. And so this is the result of several years of extremely bad offensive line recruiting for a number of reasons. We haven't really had stability in our coaching on the offensive line. We've switched around a bunch. We had an offensive line coach who did a very poor job of recruiting. We had another one that kind of came in and tried to do the best he could, but the damage was kind of done. And so we're really starting with Barcelona Dragon Man Jr., we're kind of starting the whole process over. So I feel like Bicknell's going to come in and hopefully he'll get them, you know, coached up a little bit what we have. But it's really two or three years down the line at best before you're going to see real results of an Auburn offensive line that looks anything like, you know, 2013 or 2014, unfortunately. And that means that Bo Nix this fall is going to have a harder time than he did in, you know, he's going to look like, I'm afraid it's going to look like Stidham in 2018 versus Stidham in 2017 when his offensive line kind of dipped a little bit. And the running backs are going to have to, you know, pick up the slack. And fortunately we seem to have them coming in, but yeah, we went through a long period there. You know, a guy I know on the internet that's a big Auburn guy, but is very blunt about things. He said our current offensive line this year would not make the third string at Alabama or Georgia. So you can process that and think about it, I guess.
All right, we got two more questions. First is from Keith Dale Splawn, who says, if you could pick a 10-man roster for this tournament to represent Auburn basketball on the War Tampa team next year, who would be on it? No current NBA players. And so this is harder. So, again, the current NBA players are Chuma and Jared. So, basically, anybody who's played Auburn basketball in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be on the team next year. Be on the Auburn team next year.
Is Wiley going to – Wiley's gone, isn't he?
Yeah, Wiley, Bryce Brown.
Is Wiley not in the NBA, though, or going to be? Or?
I would say probably – I mean, it's a chance.
Okay.
But it's not a done deal. Again, the NBA's changed from – I think if he had come out of college in, whatever, 92, I think he'd have been a top 10 pick. But the NBA is different now.
Okay. I don't keep up with it, so I don't know.
I know. You got to be able to run and shoot threes if you're a big man. So it's a different league now. So, those guys, you know, Anthony, I'd love to see again. But, like, you know, Deshaun Murray played on the team the other day. But it'd be fun to see, like, him and Cinnamon Bowers and those kind of guys. You know, even somebody like Javon, you know.
Yeah.
Could they need a point guard?
For sure. And who was our shooting guard last year?
Samir.
Samir, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, Samir, he got drafted.
Okay.
So I think he'll probably be in the NBA, but it's not a guarantee. But yeah, so I think that's the start of it. I only got to think about this one some more in terms of who the depth players would be.
It's just tough because the conditions are like, I don't know who's in the NBA and who's not. Sure. I just know who I like from the last few years, and they're all pretty much on two teams. So, can I have the what's his name that went to St. John's? Is he in the NBA now, or is he
sure Mustafa? No, you can have Mustafa on the team.
All right, it'd be interesting to put him back together with Bryce and a couple of other guys, and just see what happens now. So. Was kind of addition by subtraction there, though. That was a weird thing. So
I was gonna say the other thing you. When you watch this team today, the other thing is you realize, like, Bruce Pearl is not coaching that team.
Yeah. That's a big difference, isn't it? More than probably anything else, putting Auburn players out on the court with somebody other than Bruce coaching them, you really start to appreciate just what he brings to the table, you know, not just recruiting. That is interesting. All right. What else we got?
All right. Last question is from longtime Mr. Ken Ringer.
Yes, I've heard of him.
How do you see Chad Morris modifying our offense this year? Here's some changes he thinks we might see.
Okay.
Throwing to the tight end. He thinks we'll see Sean Shivers coming out of the backfield as a receiver.
Ooh.
And more passes to receivers in the middle of the field.
Mm-hmm.
And then his other question is part of this is, do you think Harold Joyner will be a factor? And I do not think Harold Joyner will be a factor. Right?
Harold Joyner, he's got that disease that seems to strike all the guys that swing out into the flat. They use him for one play only, and after a year of that, they say, have you thought about being a defensive back? God almighty. What do you see becoming of Joyner?
I mean, I just think, like, there's a lot of depth at running back, and there's a lot more talented players ahead of him. I mean, I think, you know, the Tank Bigsby and the guy who redshirted last year are going to be the two main running backs, and DJ Williams. I think those guys are going to carry the ball a lot. Maybe Shivers could, you know, fill in some at slot receiver and be a third down back kind of thing. I think this is crazy to see. I think we're going to throw the ball more with a returning quarterback, with good returning receivers, with a shaky offensive line, getting rid of the ball quickly and trying to open up the run with the pass makes some sense. I think, you know, we're going to throw it more to the tight end, but that's relative.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think it's going to be 100 passes to the tight end or anything, but I think, you know, 2 or 3 a game is more than we've been doing.
Any.
And yes, I'm saying. So I think, I mean, 3 a game would be a dramatic improvement over what we've done the last year or two in the tight end. And I think it would help, you know, it'll help Bo Nix to have a big target in the middle of the field. I do think we're going to throw it in the field. I think Chad Morris understands, you know, kind of that piece of the passing game, like where the defense is playing and what's open. And I think he's going to take advantage of it. And I think we're going to see passes the middle of the field, you know, short, medium, and long passes the middle of the field. So.
Is he a guy that's on the sideline yelling at him, or is he up in the booth calling stuff down? See, I don't know, because it's been a while since he was a coordinator.
Yeah, see, I'm trying to remember when he was at Clemson. I feel like he was in the booth.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. But it seems like our offensive coordinators lately have been on the field, or at least when Gus is doing it or claiming to be doing it or whatever. So,
yeah.
Go
ahead.
No, go ahead. I was going to change the subject slightly. So.
Oh, I'm just going to wrap up by saying, like, I genuinely believe that you're going to be able to tell some differences with Chad Morris.
Yeah. Oh, I do too.
This year. And I think the biggest one is going to be the passing game. I think they know that the passing game needs to change. Mm-hmm. That needs to get better. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to help the receivers and help Bo Nix. And I think that's going to ultimately help the running game, because if we can throw better and more effectively, then teams can't line up to stuff the run all the time.
I think that we need to figure out if Mark Anthony Richards, is he going to be in the backfield with a fullback, H-back type guy a lot, or is he going to have another running back there kind of split off with him like Cadillac and Ronnie Brown were? I need to know who his running mate in the backfield is, because they're going to become Cleopatra. That way I can say it's the Mark Anthony and Cleopatra offense, see? And that's what I need. So if it's DJ Williams back there, DJ, I'm sorry, but you're Cleopatra. I know you're a very large human being, but you're officially not Cleopatra, so. All right. On that note, I believe that was our last question. Oh, I did throw out the question, and I'm still waiting to hear back. My question I asked a couple of weeks ago, and I haven't really heard anything back, was which modern Auburn coach has done the best job against Alabama relative to Alabama at that time? So I'm curious, because I haven't heard anything. You know, was it Tuberville because he won 6 in a row? Well, how good was Alabama during those years? I don't know. Was it, you know,
he faced, let's be clear, Tuberville over the course of his career faced the worst Alabama teams overall average of any of the Auburn coaches.
Certainly the worst coaches. Mike Shula and Francione, and he got Saban when Saban didn't have any players that first year. You know, Gus has gone up against the best since the Bear and done pretty darn well. I'm not rigging this to try to get Gus some brownie points. I seriously want to know. I mean, you know, Pat Dye went up against Bear. He went up against Perkins, who was not bad. He went up against Curry, who was kind of mediocre. And he went 5-5. So, you know, I'm just curious. I guess Gus is what, 3-5 now? 13, 14, 15, 17? No, he's 3-4, right? 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. Gus is 3-4. Holy crap, if we beat Alabama this year, and we're not, if we even play him, but if we beat Alabama this year, Gus is at the same record against Nick Saban that Pat Dye was against Ray Perkins and Bill Curry and Stallings. Wow.
We can come back to your question then.
All right. I'm just leaving it out there. Do we want to go around the SEC at all? Is there anything to talk about there?
Not really.
Nah, I don't. Yeah. The coronavirus is around the SEC. That's what it is right now. And we'll see what happens.
I mean, there's some, you know, it's nice that, to start thinking about other teams and what's going on, but there's not a lot to talk about yet.
I don't have facts to back this up.
No, so we'll just leave it at that. All right. Well, I reckon we're going to get on out of here for this week, and we've got various things going on. By the way, John, I learned today that Dragon Con is canceled for 2020, so it's going to be an online event, and it'll be free. So you can actually participate in Dragon Con right off of your computer. You and your son, if you want to, can get on the computer and have a good old Dragon Con time with me and 80,000 of our closest friends and that are not in Jordan-Hare Stadium. So that'll be awesome. So more about that coming up in the weeks ahead, because I know quite a few of our listeners are big fans of that too. All right. Well, any last thoughts from you before we get out of here?
No, it's nice to think about football a little bit for a while.
It was. All right. Well, our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at auwishbone and at facebook.com/auwishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.